slapping on. You want to talk about going back? Wait till I have Seth on Wednesday. They are running on Capital OTV, the original show that Seth and I created for Saratoga, which was called Keyword Saratoga, because, you know, it's 10 years ago, and you know, the internet, the popularity and the, you know, the breadth of it was really taking hold. And I think I came up with Keyword Saratoga, and then the next year it morphed into Loose on the Lead. Or actually, it may have been. I think I got thrown off for a year, and then we came back in 2012. I think that's what happened. So we had 1 year of Keyword Saratoga. I got slapped with a ruler on the knuckles for being harsh toward Joe Bruno, and then came back. Then was brought back the next year after that, and we've had Loose on the Lead ever since. Keyword Saratoga. This is hysterical. I told Tina, try to record it so I can see what it looked like. In fact, Seth still has that same tie and jacket that in this picture that I see. It's oh, great. Johnny D standing by. Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, how are you today?
I'm as happy as a clam, as they say.
Well, I've never really got that one, except the clams are always smiling. I guess that's the only reason. Nobody's ever really figured out if a clam is happy or not. So I don't know what to pick from that. Good weekend of racing again. I think Saturday was. Sunday, you know, we caught a little rain at Gulfstream, but Saturday we had the force out, and that was entertaining. You know, it gave kept me off the streets. What the quarantine hasn't totally done, racing has done.
Well, I'm sure you just listened to me opine a little bit about the approach. How did you make out? How did you structure your rainbow play?
How did I structure it? Poorly. I got a call Saturday from a fellow who wanted to go in on the ticket, so we put a ticket together and hastily. I did the work, but then he came at the end, wanted to join in and threw in his picks hastily. And that's another discussion which you can have sometime, which will kind of kick off right here because we're talking about it. But, you know, partnering up on tickets. Some people hate to do it. They don't like to partner with anyone on tickets. Other people love to partner with other people on tickets. They'll buy little pieces of tickets here and there. I remember back in the days at Santa Anita and Hollywood Park, anywhere in California, when the pick six was rolling, when it was the $2 pick six, and, you know, guys would, you'd have the first three or four, and it's like, well, who do you have? How many do you have here? And there were guys that would go around, this is live, on track, would go around, I'm sure it happened at every track, but I was at these tracks, so I know it specifically. They'd go around and they'd either buy up the whole ticket or they'd buy up pieces of it. And these guys were sharp because they knew, based on what you had left remaining in the last and next to last legs, what your ticket was liable to be worth. And so they knew what they were great judges at what they should offer you for the ticket, what a percentage of it would cost, all these different, and then they would go sign if they you know, they go plus they throw in the signing bonus like athletes, but where they would go sign the IRS ticket and then, you know, claim back that money at the end of the year. It was like it was a bonus on top of what they got from the deal for the ticket. But I was always amazed at how sharp these guys were, because they, and the way the word spread throughout the grandstand when there was a, particularly when there was a live ticket with some bombs that had occurred early in the day, and you knew it was going to be liable to be a big payoff. You know, how the word spread, and they would find the guy. And sometimes it was the ticket holder who was interested in selling a piece, and he would go search out these brokers who would cut a deal. But a lot of times it was just word of mouth. These brokers would be, you'd see them scurrying around, and you you know, you turn to your regular group and say, "Oh, somebody's got a live one," because you'd see them kind of going by you three or four times in a hurry. And they'd have pieces of several live tickets, you know, in the pick six. Okay, so there's that whole discussion of, and then how do you do it? How do you put your tickets together? If you do go in with someone else, what's the give and take? I want this horse. I don't like that horse. No, we need it. You know, what is your framework? What is your social interaction? If it's a very close friend, do you act differently than if it's an outsider who you don't really spend that much time with and you don't play the horses with, and maybe you're a good buddy, maybe you have more respect for his opinion? It's a whole dynamic that I think is very interesting. It goes beyond just, you know, there's picking the horses, and then there's building the ticket. And we've often said these are two completely different things. And so how do you deal with someone else? It's hard enough when you're doing it yourself. When you've got someone else's opinions in there and you've exceeded the budget, you both agree, well, you know, I could put in, you know, 200 and I can put in 200, so you can have a $400 ticket. Well, you do all your handicapping, you put down the ones you want to use, and you're at $1,300, you know. It's, oh, man, we got a cut here. So how does that all work in your group? I'd love to hear from other people. And I think it depends a lot on who the person is and certainly how much you respect their opinion and how well you work together. So anyway, we put in a ticket. And I thought overall, my opinion of the races before we talked about the ticket was, I thought it was kind of difficult going in. I didn't see it as one of those that's going to come back 2,000. You know, we have those days where, you know, builds up and then, you know, it comes in kind of chalky. But I didn't have that feeling on this particular day. I thought it was going to come back pretty good. I didn't know exactly the number, certainly, but I thought 15, 20 is kind of what I thought, because I thought that the races, there were a couple races where I thought you really couldn't put your finger on one or two. It was going to be four or five. And the biggest bomb of the day came in the last race, which you could have used all in there. And I don't know, or almost all, maybe there were a couple you could have thrown out. But the idea is, if you're going to use, you know, you use as many as you can, according to your budget. And that was the race that I thought was the most, not only because they were, you know, lower-end horses. It was a mile. You had some in there that had run. You can't rely on those kind of horses to produce their efforts always the next time out. They're in and outers often. So that's kind of where I was leaning. With that, that might have been an all race. But I think looking back on it now, I think the key to it, if you could have seen the two singles, which you know, I know you said you didn't like, or you at least tried to beat Halliday, or you didn't like him as much. I thought he.
No, I picked Halliday on top. I picked Halliday on top. I was all over Halliday.
Okay, the other one, Battle of Blenheim. Yeah, you know that probably was a single too. If you're looking at the right, if you're building the ticket the right way and you're seeing the ball properly, those are your two singles, in my opinion. And then you've got to reach as deep as you can in some of these other races. I think if you see those two as singles, you can maybe build a ticket that works. But based on the fact that you've got to look at the last race as a very wide open race. Now the winner was not, I'm going to say, looking at Thoroughgraph, I could not have had the winner. I could not have used the winner. Even knowing that this is the kind of race where something weird is going to happen. But if you look at the form and you look at the last race, you look at DRF and you look at that last race where this horse battled, forced the pace through through the early three quarters of the race and then faded in the lane against many of the same that were in here who I thought were contenders. With Dexter Road was second, Trapezoid was third, and Are You Talking to Me was fourth. Beating 3 1/4 lengths. It wasn't like he was beating 10 lengths. The bug's on. You've got the weight off. This horse had run for, I mean, there were reasons. Now, there were also reasons that you could say, I don't like this horse. I understand that. I didn't use the horse. Even though I used maybe 5 or 6 in the race. But I think I looked at him and I thought about him for a good long time based upon that last effort. Because he was in the battle so long, excuse me, and he was so close to the horses I was using. And I viewed the race as a spread race. So these are the days you're going to hit these things when you do everything right. That's when you win. You can handicap really well, build a crummy ticket. You can build a fine ticket and handicap and miss, you know, your handicapping could be off. And you miss a horse that should have been on that wonderful, tight, clean ticket that you made. It happened. It's got to be your day. It really has. And I think, you know, when you talk to people that hit these kind of, make these kind of scores, it was interesting listening to Tommy Masters the other day. You had on your show about his score. It's got to be your day. And you could do all the work and, there's lots of days I do the work and I do put in a decent ticket and you alluded to it earlier. It takes one race, it takes one photo finish, one troubled trip, one mess up in 6 races, and you spread out over 6 races. That's going to happen to you a lot. So it's got to be your day. Now it's funny because I looked at the wagering information from ExpressBet this week. And it's interesting because I look at this weekly and I sometimes bring up interesting points. But looking at the top 15 winning bets, now I don't know how many more there are. I only got the top 15 from Saturday. All 15 are winning Rainbow Six League. And I've never seen that before. I look at this every week. I've never seen one wager dominate all 15 top winning bets on ExpressBet. Obviously there are many tracks running. Obviously this was where everyone was playing, so that kind of makes it that way too. But what's interesting is the tickets, you go from a $12 ticket to a $2,600 ticket. And everywhere in between, 120, 129, 194, 211, 144, you know, everywhere in between. So I look at the $12 ticket and I think, well, is this, now again, people say, well, that could be part of a bigger, you know, several tickets. And all. Yes, right. It could. But it shows you that if it's done correctly, you can hit it for $12. And I thought to myself, that's got to be a piece of many, a sequence of tickets. Okay. But when I looked at this ticket, son of a gun, the singles were Holiday and Battle of Blenheim. Those were the two singles. And, okay, they got really, you know, fortunate in the last on this ticket. They used just 2, 4, and 6 in the last. So they only used 3 in the last. They used 5 in the in the 11th, which again, I thought was a bit of a tricky race. I don't know how you, I mean, you could.
I agree. I used five.
Yeah, Tappet to win. It's the kind of horse where you say, yeah, first time out ran pretty well. That was on turf. Okay, got on dirt. Broke his maiden by 3. And then, okay, they, you know, maybe sent him a little, got a little ambitious with him early. So now he comes back. He's working great. He's got bullets. He's, you know, okay. You know, he's got to be used. But he wasn't a single by any stretch of the imagination. So they used 5 in there. And then only used 2 in the, after the 2 singles, the second leg, they only used 2, 2 and 7. And the first leg had 5 and 10. Well, in the meantime, if the 3, which, I think the 3
two
was
and seven.
Before the wire and after the wire, but not right on the wire.
Wait, he used Harper Go Lucky and Assertico. There's no way that ticket isn't a part of a sequence of tickets because nobody is throwing Louis Kingdom out of the field. I mean, there's no way.
Oh, wait, he had Louis.
You said the 2 and the 7.
No, first leg he used 5 and 10. Second leg he used 2 and 7.
That's what I'm saying. The second leg would be Harper Go Lucky, who a few people thought was a C type horse, and Assertico, who I'm sorry, I mean Assertico. You know, Assertico is a C. This has got to be part of a C of a yes, you know yes. of a C ticket.
Okay, so, but I guess what my point is it we understand that this is probably a ticket that's a part of the bigger picture. But if you, I think it's just the power of getting the singles correct, and if you get the singles correct, it gives you a lot more strength, even if you've got a small ticket. That's the overriding point, I think, that I take away from this is you've got all these other big tickets. And really, I think the sequence, you know, was crying out for a big ticket. But if you got those 2 singles right, man, that made you strong in a lot of other places. That's my review of it.
I get it, and you know, I just want to drive home the point that in this particular six race sequence, you know, you had a pace scenario that you wouldn't have envisioned in the first leg, and you had a favorite. You had a favorite that, you know, just got beat and got, you know, with that Louis Kingdom. Halliday, I went too deep in the stake, Halliday in admission office. I went too deep shooting the breeze in Battle of Blenheim in the in the 10th. I went five deep in the allowance, including the two C's that ended up being the two B's that ended up being $101 exacta, because when I was on with Mike Welsh, I said Whiskey Sunrise. In fact, I even wrote this up. I said Whiskey Sunrise should find his way onto your ticket if you can afford it. And then he and Tap It to Win run 1-2 and produce nice mutual. But that, you know, I'll Fight Dempsey, our Mercedes Boy, Haunted by the Music. I mean, those were the five I thought that, you know, you were just going to try to survive. And let's, you know, let's also, you know, talk about the fact that the Robert was clearly best in the nightcap. And if he doesn't, you know, kind of get left and mired, he probably wins that race most times they run it. And, you know, you could also turn around and, you know, talk about the photograph in the first and the second leg. I mean, this going back and trying to digest this is really, to me, the important exercise, as opposed to the, you know, the handicapping and what you used. And the one lesson I kind of came away with, Johnny, was that I spent $80. And, you know, Andy Serling taught me years ago, go back and try to figure out and be honest with yourself what you needed to spend to have those horses. And when you do that, to be able to, you know, to have the winner, you know, particularly of the second leg and the sixth leg, I mean, it's got to be a $300 ticket. And I'm not going to spend that, which gets us to the discussion of partnering up and finding two other people and each of you putting in, you know, $96 a head and you raise $288 and attack it that way. And if you hit, you've each just cashed for 10 grand.
Yeah. Not a bad Saturday. Point about the size of the ticket, when you go back and you review it, it's funny because the guy I partnered up with, the first thing he sent to me was this $2,300 ticket. Right? Here's who I like. He sends me this $2,300 ticket. And now I have to match with what I have and kind of put them together. And he actually had, and I added the horse to the ticket, Astor Pico. I added that one to the ticket as a B.
How about that?
To our total ticket. So we had both the 3 and the 5 in the first. So we're good either way there, although the 3 was an A and the 5 was a B. So we went the first two legs, we went BB. And I told him, I said, well, you know, we're dead because all your strength is gone. You're knocked out then when you go BB. But anyway, we got to the end of the day and they ran the last race. And I said, we didn't have the 4 in our ticket. And I sent him the text. I said, well, I said, your $2,300 ticket is worth about the same as my $200 ticket. Nothing. I kind of like the pick five. I'm starting to kind of think about the pick five. I know it's 50 cents, yeah. but they pay pretty good, and you get the 4. You get the 4 out of 5. Like the other day I played it, and I was alive to 4 horses in the last. I think the max was going to be like $5,000 or something like that, and the smallest one would have been like $400 or $500, something like that. And alive to 4 horses, and I lose. So it was the end of the day, so I just shut things down and went upstairs to have dinner. And I came back the next day, I had $100 in my account from the 4s. I had 4 4s. I was like, oh, look at this. This is nice. So I'm going to look at the Gulfstream's pick fives, and you know, that 4 out of 5 is nice.
There's two schools of that. I remember we had this discussion when Naira launched their Pick Five about, and Naira themselves kind of had a discussion publicly a little bit, getting feedback about whether you'd rather, and I know, I think Steve Christ is of the mind that you don't offer the 4 of 5 and the Conso and boost the Pick Five payout. But there, you know, there's two different, well, you know, there, you just offered the alternative, you know,
you
option.
Know, you know why that is? Because he picks five more often than he picks four.
Because he hits a bunch of them. That's well put. Yeah, exactly. That's a great, you're right. That's exactly right. Because yeah. Steve's capable of hitting them on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was remiss last Monday in something. I got off the air and I listened to the rest of the show and I was a little down on myself because I didn't say anything about Dennis Lynch. I know he passed away recently, and I knew Dennis from California. Palled around with him a bit, played some golf with him, and he was good friends with John and Trudy, Trudy McCaffrey and John Toffin.
McCaffrey, right?
And of course they named Delmar Dennis after Dennis Lynch, and we would go golfing, you know, the four of us, and outside of that, you know, I saw Dennis around the track, and you know I knew him pretty well, and then when he went his way, Kentucky, I went back to Philly, whatever. But I also, someone that I knew very well, Dennis went out of his way to help this person through a very difficult time. And he did it, he went above and beyond. And he did that for no other reason than because he was a good person. The only reason, he had nothing to gain. He had no, this person was not influential. There was nothing else involved. Dennis did it because Dennis liked helping people. And that's the kind of guy he was. And I felt bad that I hadn't said anything because, you know, when we lose the good ones, we should say a lot about it. And when we lose the bad ones, maybe we'll just turn the page.
Well, no, I'm glad there's just feels like there's been a, you know, too steady of a parade, you know, particular and particularly for Fasig. I mean, I think I've had Boyd Browning three times, in I don't even know, 6 months, less than 6 months. Very tough. No.
Yeah. Well, you know, Steve, I was, you know, this morning, of course, I always turn in, tune in when I can. And I was glad to get my daily dose of French racing out of the way. So listening to you run down the results from France was, you know, informative. Informative. I don't know what I would have done with the rest of the day without knowing what happened.
Well,
thank you.
That was not at all. We're folding in as much, you know, whether it's Hong Kong and Australia and Germany got going last week. Didn't get a chance to see where they're even running at Germany right now this time of year, but Dusseldorf or Baden-Baden.
You mentioning racing in France just getting back underway, and it triggered in my mind. I was thinking about this the other day with the prospect of perhaps Santa Anita getting back off and running, and obviously these other tracks, Churchill starting up this weekend, and Golden Gate beginning. It triggered in my mind a handicapping question. I'd love to hear from some of the other horse players that you talk to. This is such an unusual situation, but we do have race meetings, new race meetings, that, race meetings that open up at tracks that have not been running. We do have that first, you know, that first couple of weeks when you're not really familiar with, you know, over that surface, there are changes involved, and you have to handicap for that. In this case, but those in those situations, usually we're coming off a previous race meeting, so we have form. We have now. This is really different. This is something we've never really experienced much before. I guess some states would have breaks and meetings, and you know, like Woodbine, you know, shuts down, and you've got horses coming back off of extended layoffs. But we're not really used to that here because we kind of have, you know, cycles that, you know, tracks run continuously. And even if they don't run continuously, like take the Naira circuit, the horses go to Gulfstream or Fairgrounds or wherever, and then they come back. So you've got some form. This is a case where we're going to be dealing with horses that haven't run in a couple of months, and not just one or two in a field. Now you've got everybody, you know, that you're looking at that hasn't run. Perhaps, you know, I mean, that's the way it could come up. And I'm just interested in how handicappers will deal with it. Will you rely on, I would imagine, workouts then become workout reports, become much more important. Some of these tracks haven't even been open, though. You know, they've been closed. Santa Anita has been open on a continuous basis. And thank heaven, because if Santa Anita doesn't stay open, where do those horses go? I mean, I wouldn't even want to think about what the situation would be there. Los Al can only take a certain amount, and nobody else is open right now. I mean, Del Mar certainly is not prepared for that. I mean, where would those horses go? So anyway, to get back to the point, is it workout? Is it trainers? How the trainers do off a layoff? Is it jockey selection? Because you're going with the idea that the trainer who thinks his horse is ready is going to go get a top rider. You know, there's a lot of factors that we normally certainly work into handicapping, but now they're going to move, I think, to the front because you've lost that current form. You've lost that troubled trip. You've lost that horse getting fit. You know, you've lost a lot of the factors that you hang your hat on. It's a whole new world.
Speaking of which, Johnny, I wanted to slip this in. For those that haven't looked ahead to Thursday's overnight for Golden Gate, the card came together nice. I mean, it's not high, you know, it's not high level racing, but nice fields. among the fields, I wanted to see. I was very curious how many horses were going to come up from Santa Anita. And I make the count 8. Ray Bell, Simon Callahan, Owen Hardy, Patty Gallagher, John Sadler, Matt Chu, Ron Ellis, and Peter Urton have a total of 8 horses, 1 each. Eddie Freeman's got one that last worked at St. Louis Ray. So technically 9 horses on the card that are coming in from out of town. So, you know, folding that in against the Golden Gate workers. So you're going to have probably some surface issues as well, horses that are coming off of, you know, grass and dirt tries that are now going to run on the synthetic in some cases. I mean, the turf, they are carding turf races, of course, at Golden Gate too. But there's going to be a lot of that mix and match. I mean, that's a big, you know, that's going to be a big part, you know, of Churchill too, obviously on Saturday when we sit down. I mean, those are going to be horses that have been away since Fairgrounds. I would suppose that the Oaklawn horses are going to have a recency edge. There's going to be plenty that ran at both Fairgrounds and at Oaklawn. They're going to be very interesting, and I think people are going to need to seize quickly on some trends and incorporate it right away. I mean, in some cases, there'll be things that'll be very obvious.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Golden Gate. I believe they're having a force out of their pick six on Thursday. I think that's what I read.
As soon as they come back, you mean?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They've got, I think it was close to 390,000 in the pot. And I think, I thought I read a tweet that said, you know, thanks to our fans for welcome back, kind of that kind of thing. And we're going to disperse the pick six pot. I don't know what they call it, the Golden State Six or whatever. So that's going to be interesting because now you've got something on Thursday where you've got a force out in this world of limited content. All eyes may be on Golden Gate.
Yeah, Golden Gate. Well, you'll end up with Golden Gate, Gulfstream, no Tampa on Thursday. So Golden and Charlestown later. So we're going to have to reboot all of our mental calendars again to because Tampa's going to run till the end of the month, and then they'll go away. Fonner as well. So by the end of the month, we'll have Will Rogers runs until May 23rd, and Tampa till the 30th, Fonner to the 27th. So Gulfstream will continue. At that point, it'll be Gulfstream, Charlestown, Golden Gate, Churchill, Ruidoso, Assiniboia, Mountaineer, and hopefully Santa Anita. So there, by the end of the month, there'll be eight tracks running, and we're also waiting for Belmont as a ninth. So things will feel pretty robust by the end of the month.
Yeah, we'll have plenty to look at then. You know, your conversation earlier with Eric Zimley about the less is more topic. Excuse me. I think in this particular situation we find ourselves in, it's not only that less has proven to be more, it's under strange, exceedingly strange circumstances. You've got the competition has been, for the wagering dollar, has been pretty much hampered. You have no sports. Your live in-person casinos are closed. You still got online casinos that people can play, but basically your major competition has been silenced. And so what we're seeing the new player factor is there. I don't know how much that is accounting for. I don't have access to, and I don't know if anyone does, where this money is actually coming from. But new players probably are contributing something. But I think the key is that we're getting a bigger share of wallet. In other words, maybe on a weekend, if it's a regular spring, maybe people are betting on basketball, or they're betting on baseball. It started to roll a little bit now. They're betting on the NFL draft. They're betting on future wagers. They've got other things to wager on, and golf and auto racing take some money too. Not as much certainly as the other sports, but tennis. Some there is some wagering on that. All that's gone. So the competition's way down. And so a guy that maybe on a weekend would bet, you know, out of his budget of $1,000, he might bet 500 on racing on a normal weekend and 500 someplace else. But I think the situation we're in, that guy's taking all 1,000 and he's playing the horses with it. So that's kind of where what's happened here. So it's not just we can look at on the surface and say, oh, look, less means more. Not so fast here. Because of the way the situation is, it's been enhanced. So we got to keep that in mind before we say, oh, yeah, it just proves that less is more.
I think we knew that going in, and it's also, Johnny, whether it's in the format it's taken because of the pandemic, or whether it's the success of Saratoga, Keeneland, Kentucky Downs, Del Mar, even Oaklawn to an extent. I mean, when you've got periods and product that, you know, the race playing base anticipates and really looks forward to because of its scarcity, you basically establish that, you know, the credibility of that concept, the fact that, you know, good racing and full fields and, you know, obviously, you know, product when it's well priced goes a long way.
Yeah, but that's not less is more. That's better product is more. And I think that we already know. Better product is more. Now,
well, but this product, yeah.
I mean, how do you get to a better product? Is that, does less is more get you to a more consistent, better product? That's kind of the question. I think it's been proven, and you just, you know, substantiated it. When racing puts together major events with great cards and the full fields of competitive races, the money will come. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It's that we don't do it often enough. So the question is, if there was less racing, would we be able to do that more often? I don't know. But certainly, quality and quantity combine to hit a home run. And how do we get there, though? That's the one we struggle with.
Johnny, I appreciate it. I got to pull up. I got Eliza McGraw is going to join us, the author of Here Comes Exterminator. And we talked to her when the book came out 5 years ago, and we're going to talk to her again because you know what today is.
Today is Monday.
Monday, May 11th. And? Come on, flesh it out. Boy, oh boy.
May 11th. I don't know what
today is. It's the 102nd anniversary of Exterminator. Exterminator winning his derby at 30-1.
How did I not see that coming?
I would have thought that.
I remember it was a cloudy day.
It was in fact cloudy because it was a typically muddy derby as it feels
you.
Like they all are. But yeah, well. Exterminator pretty much put the spurs to his incredible career. He ended up, you know, beyond that, he probably started a half a dozen times to that point, but he went on to start 100 times total and win 50. And he, you know, before Man of War, he was as big a horse as the century and really the game had seen. And I thought it was a great opportunity. It's also a very strange scenario that, I mean, the pandemic had not really hit at that point in full, but of course, the influenza was going to set upon the country and the world in 1918. And so I'm going to look forward to Eliza McGraw joining us next. Johnny, have a great week, and we'll be looking at hopefully Santa Anita, Churchill, and so many more results next week.
Stevie, I think you've inspired me in honor of Exterminator's celebration of his 102-year-old Kentucky Derby victory. I'm going to go get a can of Raid and get some of these ants that have been coming in here.
Jesus. Johnny D, everybody. And there you have Johnny's take on the pick six. And indeed, there's a $400,000 Golden State pick six, the Rainbow Six version at Golden Gate, and they will force it out Thursday. So anticipating probably 2 million, probably five times. Yeah, probably 2 million, 2.5 million. Nice enough sequence, too. So you'll jump right in with both feet. We've got the Fonner pick five on Wednesday, and then you'll have this Golden State pick six on Thursday. And ideally, Santa Anita opens on Friday, from my mouth to God's ears, and Churchill on Saturday. So you got plenty, and Charlestown, it's going to be hard, actually. It's going to feel like we got too much to look at. We've gotten very focused on being able to pick out, you know, segments or, you know, certain ovals and certain days. Now we're going to be back to having to look at a number of different cards. Johnny, thanks. We'll turn toward Eliza McGraw and talk about Exterminator when we come back.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in the state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Sirius XM.